Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host on today's program, Independent Journalism Under Attack. Josh Wolf is an independent journalist and blogger who is behind bars for contempt of court. And now he is the longest incarcerated journalist in modern U.S. history. We'll hear excerpts from a press conference held for his support. And of course, we'll catch up on a bit of what's going on in our media environment with some headline news. Do stay tuned. As the FCC's media ownership rules revision process rolls on, the commission has announced that it will hold its third official public hearing on February 23rd in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The first two were in Los Angeles and Nashville. The entire commission should be in tow for this one, where the general public is invited to comment on media ownership issues, especially ones related to their local market. The commission also has its monthly open meeting scheduled for the same day, so it's unclear whether the five commissioners plan to scoot up from D.C. to Harrisburg the same day, or if they'll cancel the open meeting. And we'll have more about that hearing and maybe ways you might be able to tune in live on the next edition of Media Geek. I know there are a number of Canadian listeners to the podcast and to our late-night broadcast on CKDU in Halifax, and it appears that the debate over network neutrality is heating up north of the border, too. The Canadian press reports that it has obtained documents showing that advisors to Minister of Industry Maxime Bernier are leaning towards supporting the telecommunications industry's arguments against network neutrality regulation. Michael Geist, a law professor at the University of Ottawa, told the CP that the documents show a very one-sided industry view of the subject, saying that they would, quote, not be out of place in a lobbying document crafted by the telecommunications companies, end quote. The minister's net neutrality documents apparently advocate a position similar to what we've heard from the big telcos in the U.S., calling for having market forces shape the evolution of internet infrastructure while providing some degree of consumer choice and protection. Yet there is very little about the arguments in favor of network neutrality, which is a much bigger issue than so-called consumer choice. Meanwhile, south of the border, network neutrality has gotten a bit of a boost with the failure of last year's Republican-sponsored telecom bill to pass the Senate, and now with the democratically controlled Congress. The Dorgan Snow Internet Freedom Preservation Act has been introduced again and is awaiting action by the Senate Commerce Committee. Independent journalist Josh Wolf is currently in a federal detention facility in Dublin, California, for his refusal to hand over to a federal grand jury video footage of a protest in San Francisco. The video contains raw footage of anarchists clashing with police. Wolf says that as a journalist, he is protected by the First Amendment. A federal judge says he is in contempt of court. Supporters and First Amendment activists say the judge's action against Wolf is purely punitive and unprecedented. The previous record for incarceration of a journalist was held by freelance writer Vanessa Leggett, who was jailed for 168 days in Houston for refusing to turn over notes about a murder investigation. Wolf's lawyer believes that he may be held all the way until July, when the grand jury is due to be dismissed. On February 6th, a noontime press conference was held in support of Josh Wolf on the steps of San Francisco City Hall. So now we'll take a listen to a few speakers from that conference, from that press conference. First, we'll hear from founding publisher and editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian, Bruce Brugman.
The next speaker I want to bring up has been a supporter from early on in this cause. Thank you, Bruce Brugman, publisher of the Bay Guardian, for your ongoing support of Josh Wolf. Please come join us.
Thanks, Josh. I'm delighted to see this crowd here today. If you noticed in the Chronicle this morning, they said, blogger jailed for defying grand jury sets records. Josh Wolf is not just a blogger. Josh Wolf is a hero. Josh Wolf is a First Amendment hero. He's a public citizen hero. He's a journalistic hero. That's why I'm glad that we're all here today to honor him and to start a movement to protect people like Josh Wolf the next time this kind of thing happens. I've been doing journalism and these kind of events, not these kind of events, but Freedom of Information and First Amendment events for more than 50 years now. I've never seen anything like this. The closest I've seen was just before 9/11. I was sent on a mission to South Korea by two international free press groups to try to get three daily publishers out of jail for doing nothing more than criticizing the South Korean government. We went in, they were brought out, they were in their jail uniforms, and I thought at the time, I hope I never, ever see this again anywhere. This is worse than that. This is much worse than that. This is an independent journalist in San Francisco who is doing nothing more than his job, and he's tossed in jail for contempt, and he's held in jail for 169 days and sets a record. Where are we? Are we in Bulgaria or Korea or where are we? We're in San Francisco, and I think the reason Josh is in jail is for a couple of very important reasons. One, the local cops here decided that a damaged tailpipe in a demonstration was a federal case, and so they kicked it up to the feds. The feds were very happy to jump on this. The Bush administration, I'm very sure, I've written about this, the Bush administration wanted to target San Francisco. That's why they're targeting Josh. They're also targeting two reporters at the Chronicle and a Hearst and mainstream press organization. They want to send a message out to the anti-war movement and to the centers in San Francisco. This is the kind of thing that could happen. The Bush administration also wants to send a message out to the journalism community. No more. Or, if you cross us, we'll pull you in, we'll cite you for contempt, and you can ultimately go to jail. That's a hell of a message to send out. And of course, the last point is there's a war on. We all know there's a war on, and this is likely to get worse. And that's why this movement today is extremely important, because we not only have mainstream journalists, and there are less and less of them these days in the era of media consolidation, but we have citizen journalists, we have SBJ-type journalists, we have bloggers, we have all kinds of people that are going to need protection in terms of their journalistic and their public citizen journalism activities. The best thing that we can do is just what we're doing here today, recognizing what happened to Josh, keeping the pressure on, asking to quash the subpoena, moving to do this, moving to do that, and asking the government to release it. But mainly, keeping the pressure on and keeping this movement going and at the ready so that the next journalist, mainstream, blogger, citizen, whatever, will have this kind of immediate and long-range support. Thank you, thank you, thank you for coming.
Our next speaker is from the First Amendment Project, who's been at the forefront of free speech and free press movements. I want to welcome David Green, one of Josh's leading attorneys.
Thanks, Julian. Josh Wolf is in jail. For every one of you out there who is holding a camera, Josh is in jail for you. For every one of you out there who is holding a pad of paper and taking notes, Josh is in jail for you. Everyone holding a microphone, Josh is in jail for you. For every one of you out there who plans to read what the press here is writing, to view what the cameras are taking, to listen to the audio that's being recorded, Josh is doing this for you. It is not a selfish act. He has nothing to gain personally by being in jail. But he does care so deeply about the First Amendment principles that he's in jail for that he's willing to sacrifice his personal freedom. It is essential that the press operate independent of government, that not be seen, not be perceived as being an extension of the government, an investigative arm of the government. That is essential, and Josh knows that if he is to give up, it will only embolden the government the next time a subpoena is issued. It will only be sending the message that journalists don't care. Well, journalists do care, and that is what Josh is fighting for. He's fighting for all of us. He's fighting for the public's right to know. He's fighting for the press's right to be free. and that we should be eternally grateful that he sacrificed his personal freedom for this. A contempt citation, even if you believe that Josh perhaps should have gone to jail, should have complied with the subpoena, that every citizen should do that, there must be some limit to the amount of time you spend in jail. It's 168 days. Surely, any message the government wanted to send about the importance of complying with the subpoena has been sent. It's done. Let him out. Our next speaker just recently avoided jail time herself, and she'll fill you in on some of the specifics of her case. Sarah Olson is a journalist and radio producer, and we're very glad that she's not behind bars herself right now. Welcome, Sarah Olson.
Hi, thanks so much for being here today. It is indeed, as people have been saying, a very dark day for journalism, as Josh Wolf breaks the record for the number of days that a journalist has been incarcerated for refusing to comply with a grand jury subpoena here in the United States. As David pointed out, Josh is protecting each and every one of us as journalists, each and every one of us as people who want to gather up and to disseminate news free of government intervention. And he's protecting each of us as citizens in a country that has at its very core and its very foundation a commitment to the right of information, the right of freedom of speech, and the right of citizens to speak to journalists without fear of harassment or intimidation. These are at the very foundation of the Constitution of this country, and they are very slowly being eroded at this moment. And Josh is in prison protecting those rights, and he is indeed a hero. He is indeed someone who should be honored by the Society of Professional Journalists and others who have taken up his cause around the country. Josh is in prison after having broken no law and after having been convicted of no crime. He will languish in federal prison unless something is done about it by us until at least July. And it's up to us to say enough is enough. Josh Wolf should not be in prison. Josh Wolf should be honored as a hero, as someone who is upholding the First Amendment. And I want to say also that I think that it's a journalist's job to report the news, as Josh has been doing, even when it's unpopular or inconvenient for the current administration, for the current political climate. It is not a journalist's job to participate in the prosecution of in government prosecution. It's absolutely essential that the barrier between press and government remains strong, and that journalists, as people have been saying, are not perceived as the eyes and ears of the government. When that happens, when journalists are seen as any kind of possible witness, the speech in the United States will be chilled, debate will be silenced and stifled, and journalists will be scared away from covering the important stories, the important topics. And I think that it's essential for all of us to stand up and to protest the continued incarceration of Josh Wolf. We absolutely need a movement of people who care about the First Amendment to say to the current administration that we've had enough. We will not allow for Josh Wolf. We will not stand for Josh Wolf to continue to be incarcerated for absolutely nothing. So, again, enough is enough. The subpoenas have to be dropped, and we need to free Josh Wolf.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you so much for continuing to hold the torch for free press in this country after your case was resolved. We really appreciate that. An organization that has been behind Josh from the very beginning and has been helping with his legal defense as well as media outreach on his behalf is the National Lawyers Guild. And I want to bring up Carlos Villarreal, Executive Director of the San Francisco Bay Area Chapter of the National Lawyers Guild.
There's absolutely no reason why Josh Wolf should be in prison right now.
Judge Alsup had an opportunity to let him out, and with a stroke of absolute arrogance, he denied a motion for his release without even a hearing. The issue before him was simply this. At a certain point, so-called coercive confinement becomes punishment, and that point was reached long ago in this case. In fact, the only reason Josh was ever incarcerated for a single day was because of the politically motivated choices of the U.S. Attorney's Office and a flawed system that gives prosecutors and grand juries excessive powers and allows abusive situations like this one. However, even accepting the U.S. Attorney's malevolence and the flawed system, Josh could have joined us here today. Just because grand juries have the power to call witnesses and ask a judge to incarcerate someone who doesn't fully cooperate, and just because the judge has the power to find that witness in contempt and keep that person there for the life of the grand jury, does not mean that a judge has to do those things. The motion before Alsup did not require a denial. In fact, it is based on precedent that suggests Josh should be freed. Yet Judge Alsup made the choice to continue wasting taxpayer dollars to incarcerate a completely harmless, independent journalist who is missed by his family and friends. This is hardly surprising, since Alsup has bizarrely lectured Josh in open court about the privilege we all enjoy of a free press and the need to cooperate with the federal government as thanks for that freedom. While the U.S. Attorney's Office must be held responsible for their actions against activists and journalists, Judge Alsup, who does not answer to Alberto Gonzalez, should not be let off the hook. The National Lawyers Guild is concerned about the increasingly repressive activities of the federal government. We believe that human rights ought to be regarded as more sacred than property interests. We support Josh because we believe that his right to be free from incarceration, his right as a journalist, ought to carry much more weight in our courts than the bogus interests the federal attorneys claim they are trying to protect. Thanks.
And that was audio from a press conference held in support of jailed journalist, independent journalist, Josh Wolf. We just heard from Carlos Villarreal, who is from the National Lawyers Guild. Before that, we heard from Sarah Olson, a journalist who herself avoided jail time because she was subpoenaed by a military judge to testify in the case against Lieutenant Watada, who refused to mobilize for Iraq. She was going to be forced to testify, which she did not want to do, about anti-war statements that Lieutenant Watada made to her. She was released from that subpoena, and in fact, the Watada trial ended the day after the press conference on February 7th with a mistrial. And before that, we heard from David Green, a First Amendment Project attorney who's been working for Josh Wolf, and we started off with comments from the editor and founder of the San Francisco Bay Guardian, Bruce Brugman. And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I am your host. My name is Paul Riesmandel. Media Geek is online at MediaGeek.net. That's where we have the Media Geek blog. I've got a fun story up there right now, looking back at the annals of pirate television, something we don't hear too much about. In fact, something especially people who are not just pirating but hijacking TV signals. We haven't seen an instance of that since the 1980s. It's been almost 10 years since it's happened. And the last case happened in Chicago in November of 1987 and still has never been solved. So there's a story about that and links to some YouTube video of that strange occurrence, as well as all sorts of other, sometimes more serious things at MediaGeek.net. The radio show is at radio.mediageek.net. You can download it in MP3 or Vorbis. You can also subscribe to the podcast and get it automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player, all at mediageek.net. If you have any comments about the program, anything you'd like to hear more of, less of, you want to say good job, you want to say mediocre job, or you could do better, please send it to me. I'd love to hear from you, paul@mediageek.net. In his new budget, President Bush has not missed an opportunity to take a swipe at public broadcasting, asking for an approximately 25% cut in the Corporation for Public Broadcasting budget. That's at least $114 million of the total $460 million budget. The Association of Public Television Stations said the total impact could be as high as $145 million when cuts in related programs are added, including a program to upgrade radio station satellite facilities. In addition to the cuts, the traditional advance funding for future years programs would disappear, potentially making it harder for public stations to commit to future TV programming. Without a doubt, this is bad news to public TV and radio stations that rely heavily on CPB funding. However, I can't help but reflect on what we heard from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting's Peter Hart on last week's show, and how this conservative Republican attack on public broadcasting is just a repeat of the same old cycle that forces friends of public broadcasting to fight for crumbs and be happy when the cuts aren't quite as bad as initially suggested, even though broadcasters get their crumbs by sucking up to the right wing. Predictably, MoveOn.org has launched an online petition to oppose Bush's proposed cuts, taking rhetorical advantage of the new Democratic Congress. The petition calls on lawmakers to, quote, save NPR and PBS once and for all, end quote, by guaranteeing, quote, permanent funding and independence from partisan melding. From partisan meddling. I think it'd be interesting to see some partisan melding, some mind melding across the aisles of Congress. But interestingly enough, this actually does sound quite a bit like what FAIR advocates for public broadcasting, to make it truly independent and not subject to annual budgetary attacks. Indeed, true political independence and freedom from the yearly budget cycle would do a lot to save public broadcasting in the U.S., especially public TV. But that still doesn't address public broadcasting's increasingly commercial nature, as seen in its reliance on corporate underwriting and grants, which also influence broadcasters away from controversial public service programming. To reduce the influence of corporate financing, the current funding for public broadcasting would have to be greatly increased, not just maintained at current levels. Now, somewhat luckily, threats to the CPB budget have less impact on community media, which tends to rely much less on those grants. The Media Geek Radio Show home station, WEFT, receives a small annual grant for program acquisition, which helps allow the station carry many very good syndicated programs. However, the grant does not contribute significantly to basic operation. This is true even for larger community stations and the Pacifica Network. A cut in CPB funding would probably hurt all of community radio, but not constitute the same kind of threat that it does to public broadcasting. Generally speaking, the media reform movement has pinned a lot of hopes on the new Democratic Congress, even if past Democratic Congresses haven't always been quite such the protectors of public interest in the media. It will be interesting to see how many of these priorities, like protecting public broadcasting, will actually make it onto the larger congressional agenda. And one of these things that's popping up again on the congressional agenda is intellectual property rights, or your rights to be able to use the media, the cultural products that you purchase and own, in terms of being able to record things, reuse things. And Democrats are not necessarily any greater friends of the public interest, greater friends to your ability to use what it is you own, than Republicans, because money cuts across both parties, and so many Democrats come from the region we know as Hollywood, and they're ready to put in front of Congress something, another act, which would inhibit your ability to record and reuse programming from internet radio and satellite radio. Now, an interesting thing happened in this last week. We heard some fairly encouraging words in favor of having fewer restrictions on intellectual property, music in particular, coming from Steve Jobs, the CEO of Apple Incorporated, which operates, of course, the iTunes Music Store, the largest music seller on the web and the manufacturer of the nearly ubiquitous iPod music player. In a commentary he posted to the Apple website, he talked about why Apple continues to use what they call, continues to use their own digital rights management routine. It's copy protection, and will not license it to other companies, something which is being criticized for in Europe. Specifically, Norway has found that Apple's refusal to license this technology to other manufacturers and other companies is anti-competitive. He says they won't do it because they're afraid that if they share this technology, then the cat will be out of the bag and it'll be more easily broken. and then they'll lose the trust and be out of contract with the record labels. But it says that the only reason they have this copy protection, this digital rights management, is because it's demanded by the big four record labels, two of which are actually headquartered or have significant ownership in Europe. That's Sony BMG, the Bertelsmann Music Group, and Vivendi Universal, which is a French company. It's because they won't let Apple get rid of digital rights management and just sell music that you could copy on, you know, freely and use freely, that they have to do this. And that's really up to the music industry to change the terms. And that sounds great to anyone who is in favor of the ability to use and share our music as we like, recognizing that sharing music is the way in which we often find out about artists and which way all share in our culture and are better able to use our culture. And it's probably more in the interest of the record industry because it stimulates sales rather than inhibiting sales. Although some very eagle-eyed bloggers have pointed out that there are artists available on the iTunes Music Store on labels like Network Recordings out of Vancouver, Canada, which are also available through a service called eMusic.com, which sells un-DRM'd MP3s. So there are some artists on this label network where if you go to eMusic.com, you can buy and download MP3s that have no digital rights management. You can copy and do with as you please, but if you buy them through the iTunes Music Store, you have to get them with the iTunes DRM, and you can't move them around or use them as you please. So it seems like a little bit of contradiction even in how Apple implements its copy protection, because it seems like that record label is fine with not having that copy protection. So who's really forcing it there? Apple or the record label? And of course, the main thing that benefits Apple is that their copy protection scheme only works with iPods. It only works with the iTunes Music Store. You can't download tracks from the iTunes Music Store and put it onto your Microsoft Zune or any other sort of MP3 player. So there may be more than what appears there. There may be more underneath there. But it's good to see stimulating public discussion about how we can use our culture. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.